You're listening to Ask Us Anything, a periodic podcast by Wise Travel Confederation, exploring topics of interest to the youth and student travel industry. My name's Wendy Morrow. I coordinate research and educational activities at Wise Travel Confederation, and I'll be your host. In September 2021, I caught up with Callum Kennedy, a longtime and well-respected professional of the youth travel industry. Callum was director of the BUNAC Group from 1992 until 2012. BUNAC, which stands for British Universities North America Club, has specialized in arranging work and travel experiences for students since 1962. During Callum's time with BUNAC, he was a board member of several sector associations affiliated with Wise Travel Confederation. He also served as chairman of BETA, the British Educational Travel Association. For the last decade, Callum Kennedy has worked as an independent international consultant, providing advisory services to organizations dealing in international travel and cultural exchange programs for young people. We discussed Callum's area of expertise, work and travel, but also touched on summer camps, digital nomads, Brexit, and the role of associations for professionals in the travel trade in the age of the internet. We also discuss what a utopian work and travel program might look like and hear about some of the big shifts and disruptions in youth travel over the course of Callum's career. Have a listen. Callum, it's nice to talk with you today. Thank you for making time for it.
Thank you for including me, Wendy.
So we usually catch up at the World Youth and Student Travel Conference, or WISTC, or WYSTC, as people like to call it, each year. But this year is a little bit different, not just because neither of us will actually be there in Lisbon physically, but if I'm allowed to say, I think it's because you've also decided to retire.
To withdraw from the industry almost completely, but not 100%. I'll still be around for little bits and pieces that I want to keep going.
Sounds rather dignified.
It sounds ideal. So reality matches it.
So you're based in the UK, and you've been an independent international consultant in youth travel exchanges for, I'd say, the last decade or so. And prior to that, you led BUNAC for a few decades. And I just thought we could start, for those listening who don't know BUNAC, can you tell us briefly, in your own words, what is BUNAC? What does it do? What did it do? And how did you get started there?
Sure, yeah. Although Vicky Cunningham is probably a better place to explain what BUNAC is. But I got started with BUNAC, which is an international exchange organization formed in 1962, originally by the coming together of North America clubs in Cambridge, Oxford, and University of London. And they decided that the best way to get cheap flights to the States, well, in fact, the only way in those days, was to form an association which would give access to charter flights. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that started in 1962. My first encounter with BUNAC was in 1972 when I was a student studying economics at the University of Manchester. And I saw a sign which said, "Do you want to teach sports in an American summer camp?"
Okay.
Yes, I do. So I went with through BUNAC in 1972 to a camp in Maine, one of the earliest summer camp experiences in 72, and loved it, and went back for many years with BUNAC. Mm-hmm. Then real life caught up with me, and I became a teacher, which gave me the opportunity to continue an involvement with BUNAC all the way through to 1992, when I took over as director of BUNAC and stayed there for until 2012. So, BUNAC expanded from working, sending young people to the USA and Canada and Australia, the typical destinations for UK students through volunteer programs all over the world and a huge inbound program into the UK, the biggest of its type.
Okay, so which sports did you teach in Maine?
When I was younger and slimmer, I actually taught phys ed, even though my degree was in economics. When I was teaching for 15 years, it was mainly phys ed with some economics. And in the camp, I taught swimming and waterfront activities.
Okay.
But I was there 8 years.
Wow.
And between 78 and 92, I spent almost 2 weeks every summer going around the backwoods of the USA, various states, visiting the summer camp participants, which was one of the BUNAC things, was to make sure we visited almost everybody if we could.
Okay. Well, you know, being from New England myself, the motto of the state of Maine is the way life should be.
I couldn't agree more with that.
So was that your first international trip?
It was my first serious as a almost adult trip. Previous to that, I grew up mainly in Northern Ireland, and I took a summer as a schoolboy picking strawberries in East Anglia here in England.
Okay.
And another summer canning peas in Scotland. And my father was in the Royal Navy, so we did a lot of traveling.
Okay.
While growing up.
So what about those early jobs really spoke to you, or the early work and travel jobs, I suppose?
Yeah, it's the early work and travel first of all, working on a summer camp with 200 children, that's what made me get into teaching. And while teaching, having enjoyed the work abroad, the international experience so much with BUNAC, it made me want to spread the word, if you like. While I was only working tangentially with BUNAC, because the international travel experience added to the international work experience, for me, was something that I just thought almost everybody should do. There are some for whom it's not right, but I think there are so many people who will and have benefited from that experience. That I'm so delighted that 50 years after my first experience, they're all still going strong, and BUNAC is still going strong.
If I can pick up on those early days of BUNAC, which I think some of youth travel goes even further back than that, and I think collaboration is really a foundation of this niche of travel, and you had university students organizing with other student unions to have cultural exchanges to make it more accessible, more affordable. You mentioned the charter flights. ISTC, or the International Student Travel Confederation, of which you were long involved with and is one of the precursors of Wise Travel Confederation, where I work and where you've been involved as well for many years. It's a travel trade association. It was born out of the student union movements for travel. Would you say that we need international travel trade associations any longer? And maybe are they needed in particular in student travel anymore, especially in the internet age?
I think that the last 2 years have illustrated very clearly the need for communication and collaboration and sharing of information and frankly, helping each other. The question of associations is an interesting one, because BUNAC was originally a club, a student club, and it became more and more difficult to, the concept of clubs and associations began to fall out of favor, I think partly because of the reason you were saying about other means of communication. For me and for BUNAC, There's nothing to beat face-to-face exchanges. And I think conferences are a very cost-effective way of meeting partners, competitors, new people, old people in all senses, and just finding out what is going on. Now, yes, a lot of that can be done electronically and through Zoom meetings, but often the fact we've all had enough of Zoom meetings, I think there's a strong argument for getting together face-to-face. Now, whether that should be done through an association or through some other ways of just getting people together, I think is something that WISTC, yes, it was the Australians who began to call it WISTC. I'm still a traditionalist, and I call it WISTC. But I think WISE, I know over the last couple of years, has been questioning, you know, what is it that an association can and should provide, and is it necessary? And I think that is a crucial thing for an organization to do, because people need a reason to join. Mm-hmm. And the association, on the other hand, has to provide a justification for taking a membership fee. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, although I'm a traditionalist, what WISE provides in terms of interaction, intelligence, research, and opportunities, and just ideas that, well, things that make you think. Mm-hmm. And the changes over the last few years in terms of the communication and the newsletters and the updates, I think is the way in which associations should be going, in order to be demonstrating to the membership what they're getting out of their membership, rather than just a reduced fee once a year to go to a conference.
And you haven't been paid to say that, right?
Not yet.
Well, yeah, I personally believe the association sits in a unique position. You know, you may do business in one area, but we at the association have a view on all the areas that you may partner with. And I think that's a unique and valuable perspective. So,
but indeed, you know, I'm also a member of BETA here in mm-hmm. the UK, and BETA does an excellent and outstanding job of many of the same things that we were talking about for WISE, yep. but on a UK basis. And I think there is value in belonging nationally to an association, but to get that extra perspective, you need to belong to or have contact with an international association, which does exactly what you've said. Mm-hmm. I also should say that in my early days, when I was learning the ropes, the association and the meetings brought me into contact with some outstanding individuals and organizations that really helped me learn the job. Because yeah. even though I thought I knew what BUNAC did and how to do it, it was only when I met others, and mm-hmm. I won't name names because I'll leave somebody out, but the executives that I met were so helpful and so constructive, even if they were competitors.
Yeah, I think that's something I hear every year at the conference, that it's a friendly learning among your competitors environment, which people seem to appreciate. Work and travel is a pretty complex product in the travel space. You need to follow what visa policy changes are happening so that you can help people get visas. Then there's the actual job once you get there, and all of the support in destination on top of getting there and having a safe and comfortable place to stay. As we said earlier, it's dominated by a handful of traditional destinations, most of which are English-speaking countries. And they all have fairly formalized working holiday visa schemes. Do you see opportunities outside of these traditional destinations? And I think the second part of that is, you know, what does a utopian work and travel scheme look like? It's probably a big question.
Yeah, I think those questions are sort of all linked together in a way. I mean, one of the big changes I've noticed over the last many years, is a shift. And you mentioned all the components that go together into to make a work and travel program. The big shift, mainly through improvements in information technology and just changes in young people's attitude, is that we use the term program, which implies all these elements being joined together. A great shift, and partly because of, you know, low-cost airline fares as well, is that young people now think they believe they can do it. I can do those things myself. And to a large extent, in some countries, they're right. Mm-hmm. And that puts pressure and gives an incentive to our organizations like us to justify what it is we're charging for. Now, there are, historically, embassies and governments used to rely on organizations like the membership of WISDC, you know, to promote their programs, to do most of the admin for the programs, to screen the participants, and to deliver fully fledged applications, literally deliver them to their door. Nowadays, even, I'm thinking particularly of Canada, they don't require that, they do it themselves. So there really is a much reduced role for organizations like ourselves. The United States is the other end of the extreme, actually requires there to be sponsors, acknowledges the fact that sponsors need third-party organizations in the recruiting countries in order to make the programs work. So your question about what's a utopian program to a participant is one where they don't need a work visa, buy a cheap flight. They can go whenever they want. They can stay as long as they want. They can do what they want when they get there in terms of work and move around and change jobs and move around the country. From the provider's point of view, the utopian program is something which involves the organization at every stage. A utopian program depends on whether you're a participant or a program provider. And the reality is on a spectrum somewhere between those two extremes. You also asked about other kind of opportunities for countries that aren't involved in the big three or four.
Yes.
And I've been asked that many times over the years, actually mainly at WISTC, WISTC conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we get in? Is this a club that is excluding us? And my answer usually is you need to start small. You need to create an organization within your country that has credibility, that gets a track record. You then need to tell your government about yourself, tell your equivalent of your foreign affairs department, your immigration department, your labor department, what it is you've been doing and basically how good you are. Even send them reports if they don't ask for reports. I think a good example or a good model of what they could be aiming for is the YMS scheme, the Youth Mobility Scheme within the UK, which allows for reciprocal movement between two countries of a specific number to do a specific set of jobs. That's not the answer they want. They want to know, how can I send 500 students to the UK or to the USA? And the answer is mainly, not yet. Get your track record, become established, earn yourself credibility.
I mean, these are things that take years in some cases. And I can think of some people in Latin America that I've spoken to since I've worked at WISE that are still working on these things.
Latin America is a good example because I have at WISTC meetings spoken to a number of representatives from Latin American countries who've asked about the UK, and the YMS program, the Youth Mobility Scheme program, is open. I mean, it's open, but you have to go through your own government and get your government to speak to the UK government. Now, obviously, the last 18 months have made it difficult to have those conversations. In fact, impossible to have those conversations. But you're right, Wendy. It's a long-term, 5-6 years possibly, undertaking. But you've got to start those 5 or 6 years now, or 5 or 6 years ago.
What would you say are a couple of the biggest shifts that the youth and student travel industry sector has experienced during your career? And that could be, you know, across the whole of it or maybe in a particular area of it.
I think, and I'm sort of repeating myself a bit here, is the confidence that young people have to do elements of the program themselves. And they're questioning or forcing us to justify what it is we're providing and why we're charging for providing it. The "I could do that for myself" attitude is increasing. Mm-hmm. And as I stated, to some extent, they're right. I mean, take the summer camp program as an example, USA summer camp program. It's a classic example of the shift from the program where you apply to a provider like BUNAC, and BUNAC places you in a summer camp. The move over the last 4 or 5 years is for applicants to say, I can now, through the internet, I can look up as many camps as you can, and I can choose my own camp. I can speak to that camp. I don't need you to be telling me I should be going to Camp X. I know I want to go to Camp Y. Mm-hmm. And that introduction of choice in all aspects of the program, which we're not offering anymore because program is the wrong word now, all aspects of the product we provide, I think that's the shift.
About that confidence, I mean, do you think that comes through technology or, you know, the marketplace? Just that all of those pieces are available to anyone who wants to book them individually? Is it social media where someone sees that they can do that or they can aspire to this experience? I guess I'm wondering, what is that change in confidence on the traveler's part?
It is, to a large extent, the fact that they have traveled before, both short haul and in many cases, long haul. Mm-hmm. I used to speak to 200 students in a hall and ask, how many of you have been to America before? And one or two hands would go up. We don't even ask the question now, because you know the answer is going to be virtually every hand in the room will go up. So there's a greater confidence about being able to travel, knowing mm-hmm. what's involved in traveling, and thinking, well, it's not that complicated. Mm-hmm. All I have to do is buy a ticket. There is a lot of invisibility behind what we provide, which is very difficult and perhaps unnecessary to explain to participants. But we know what they are, and that's what we are, you know, charging them for.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other shifts that you would pick up on as, you know, a big change for the industry since you've been working in it?
Shorter term attitudes. The willingness to go and do something or go somewhere, but for a shorter term. Mm-hmm. Like volunteer programs is a good example.
Okay.
You start doing them, young people would go for 3 months and think nothing of it, going to a 3-month placement, and often would extend it to 6 months mm-hmm. while they were there. There were developments with information technology and the internet. Means again, there's a desire to go somewhere just to be there or to have said that they've been there, but not necessarily to stay as long as we might want them to. Mm-hmm. And the marketplace has become very busy with organizations on the volunteer field, you know, offering short-term 2 weeks, 4 weeks experiences as part of a travel experience rather than as a volunteer experience. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are still many organizations that are offering a serious volunteer experience, but it's become a bit clouded. But maybe that's what the market needs, is choice. And those who want to choose a short-term experience can do so, and those who want a harder core experience can choose that too.
Yeah, I think we've seen that in the New Horizons research, that this speaks to that confidence you were mentioning, that you know, there is more experience with travel, whether that's, you know, weekends here or there, or a long trip to the US or Mexico. I mean, I think the digital nomad trend kind of fits into this. There's some companies out there who are, you know, will bring you somewhere with a bunch of other people. You just need to bring your job. And then we're going to go on this multi-country itinerary. I think that that's speaking to people, but...
But that's also blurring the lines between travel and work and travel programs, because the digital nomad doesn't need a work visa. Well, maybe they do, but they don't necessarily get one.
Right.
So they can go and travel and they can do a job for a company in the country where they are, or their home country, or indeed any country. So work and travel is, the definition has changed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily working and traveling in the country you are in. It could be a much broader definition. And that, to some extent, you know, circumvents visa regulations. But it's a difficult one to police. And perhaps it's something that, you know, shouldn't be discouraged.
All right. Moving on from digital nomads. I want to pick up on this. We have the Australians to blame for WSTC being called WSTC. This is a discovery for me.
Well, as you know, WISDC started in 1992 in Rio. And that was my first WSTC, WISDC, and also the first WISDC. And it was also interesting because within WISDC was the FITO conference and the ISTC conferences.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first steps towards amalgamation. And that was very exciting because it certainly wasn't something that everybody wanted at the time. And there were some very strong arguments, both pro and against. As Australians became more and more frequent, there were more of them in at the conferences. I think it was probably Dick Porter, actually, who was the first person I heard say WSTC. And it was picked up then by, it was probably compulsory within STA to call it WSTC. And it spread to others. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. I'm sure he'll deny it as well, actually. But
well, that's something I've learned this week. So, and you've been to almost every edition of WISTC since 92, from what I understand. We've talked about it in the past. Can you share some of your funniest memories or, you know, most memorable memories?
I think memorable memories rather than funny memories. It's have to protect the innocent and the guilty. The strangest one, the strangest experience was Vienna, which I think was 93. It was very early on anyway. And it was in a sauna. It was in a hotel complex that was a big dome with a huge swimming pool and tropical zone within it. And the temperature throughout the conference all week was about 90 degrees. And the humidity was about 110 degrees. And it was virtually unbearable. People were dripping all the way through. But a little secret, and I've really not spoken about this to many people or any people. There was within the hotel something akin to a Narnia door. And I don't know how I discovered this, but you went through the Narnia door. There was a nudist sector of the spa. And it wasn't signposted.
Uh-huh.
It was just
a surprise.
And there were more than probably about half a dozen conference people in there, none of whom spoke to each other or acknowledged each other or have spoken about it.
There was no open bar there.
No, it was pure...
Pure nudity.
Pure nudity and swimming pools and saunas and baths. So that was an interesting one.
Wow.
Cancun was, it was just after, it was a memorable one,
mm-hmm.
just after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
We were very reluctant to fly at all, coupled with the fact there had been a hurricane just before the conference. It was a handful of people there, maybe 70 or 80. It was a great conference because there was lots to talk about, but a sad situation to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the conferences have been wonderful, in wonderful places, very productive, I would take my program managers with me, and they would meet up with their contacts. Mm-hmm. And again, coming back to the, you know, the purpose of a conference, mm-hmm. is to learn new things, but also to cement current relationships as well as look for future ones. Mm-hmm. I'm avoiding the question really about what are the funny things that happen at conferences.
Well, okay. We could talk about Brexit instead.
Okay. leaving aside the sort of macro political issues, you know, connected with Brexit, and just looking at how it affects travel issues for our demographic. Of course, it's been masked to a large extent over the last 18 months by the whole COVID thing. My feeling is that when it clears, there will be very little effect on the ability to travel for young people, you know, to and from the European Union and the UK. The travel and tourism sector is just too important for that to be overly affected negatively. Clearly, the issue is going to be with the work side of the programs for young people. And au pair is a classic example where it's had a hugely serious effect. The steps are being taken on that. And they're working very hard to try and get some sort of recognition of an exception there. Yeah. In this country, and again, it's masked a lot by COVID, we have some huge shortages in certain occupations. The occupations which young people used to work in hospitality and restaurants, agriculture, you know, the short-term, almost seasonal roles that our travellers, you know, would fill. And I think there is, although the government at the moment is resisting any pressure to make exceptions, yeah, I think that there's going to have to be some relaxing, either by sector or by age. And the, you know, 18 to 31 group is coming back to what I was talking about earlier, the youth mobility scheme age group. And with a bit of imagination and a bit of give and take, you could imagine there being a youth mobility scheme created between the UK and the European Union. Mm-hmm. Now, it's designed for specific countries, but there's no reason why the European Union bloc couldn't be seen as so effectively you would have an agreement for 30,000, 50,000, whatever many thousand from the European Union, age 18 to 31, to come to the UK for up to 2 years, you know, to work, actually to work wherever they wanted to. And a reciprocal arrangement for the same number of UK young people to go and work in the European Union. Now, the European Union doesn't work very quickly, and the relationships between the UK and the European Union are not great at the moment, plus the COVID effect. Mm-hmm. But it's the sort of potential solution that would save face for the UK government and to some extent allow an opening for the European Union. Whether anybody is following this up, I don't know. It's probably not, again, not the right time to be pushing it too hard, because you'll get a no. It's the time to be working at it under the surface, so that when things die down, it could be followed up as a possibility.
You mentioned some numbers there. Are those just numbers you're picking, or are they relevant to maybe recent flows?
Yeah, on the existing youth mobility scheme, for example, Australia has 30,000 places, New Zealand has 13,000, Canada 6,000, and then it goes down to quite small numbers. Japan is 1,500, Monaco 1,000, Taiwan 1,000, Hong Kong 1,000, and the Republic of Korea. Some odd places there. But those are the only companies, the only countries involved at the moment in the youth mobility scheme. There are internship programs for other countries, but that's the most flexible program.
Okay.
And as I said, exists already. And the Australia, New Zealand and Canada, you know, 30,000, 13,000 and 6,000 places are never fully subscribed. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not going to be a quick fix.
Yeah. What would you say that professionals, younger professionals maybe in youth and student travel now should know about its past, but maybe they don't know?
it's difficult to answer that without sounding like, you know, Methuselah or, you know, all the father of time. But I don't really know. I think the people have said to me, you know, you were lucky to work in the golden age of, you know, youth and student travel. And I think, well, actually, every age is or should be the golden age of youth and student travel. Yes, that we come across bumps in the road and big hiccups, and 9/11 was more than a bump in the road, I know, and COVID is more than a bump in the road, but there have been things we have to overcome periodically along the way, some much more serious than others. I mean, we had foot and mouth disease here in the UK. We had 7/7 here in the UK, mm-hmm. Which, you know, created major problems for mobility, youth mobility. But to answer your question, I would say that, you know, the golden times are between these bumps. It comes back. It comes back partly because of the resilience of young people and their desire to continually travel and have new experiences, but also partly because of the professionalism of the industry in creating the right experiences that young people will want. And looking ahead, if I can, I think the opportunities, it's maybe unfair to call it a golden age, but because of the restructuring and the realignment of the industry over the last 18 months, the opportunities when things ease up and open up are going to be huge. And it will be a new structure because many of the old guard have gone. A lot of the new guard have gone as well. Mm. And for those who are flexible, have a strategic plan in place, are able to move quickly, are able to provide what I think young people are going to want, which is pay and go programs. They're not going to want something which involves 3 months of uncertainty, having paid now and don't go for 3 months.
Right.
They're not going to want that in terms of the uncertainty of the destination or the uncertainty of their payments. So pay and go will be an important part of the regeneration of the industry. And also, I think those who have clear and flexible terms and conditions and cancellation clauses and deferment clauses and refund clauses are going to be the ones that will attract the customers.
So it should be as easy as turning on or off your Netflix subscription.
It should be as easy for the participant. It's not as easy for the provider.
Sure.
I know that. But I think it's a good point, Wendy, that's the ease of participation or ease of involvement that young people are looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought we could wrap up, Callum, by asking you about some of the people that helped you get started in travel and helped you along the way, and if there's anything you'd like to say about them.
I was very fortunate when I first started. I came into an existing successful organization with a position within the industry, and I came in at an executive level. And the people that I worked with and went to conference with and had the opportunity to watch in operation were fantastic role models. They were definitely the old guard, and they had some experiences going back, in many cases, decades before I joined the industry. Some names: Gordon Colliery from USIT, Rod Hurd and David Smith from Travel Cuts and Swap, Jack Eagle, Joe Hickey from CIEE, or Council as we knew it in those days. Dick Porter, again from STA, was a great help. And the secretariat couldn't have been more helpful. In fact, everybody, I know this sounds utopian to use your phrase again, everybody was, certainly in those days, helpful to everybody else. But the ISTC, which was the organization in charge, was much smaller. It had, and I guess in some ways, privilege because they had a large share of the youth and travel market, and it was dominated by a few large organizations and a few individuals, but it was very helpful in encouraging and sharing experiences and opportunities in those days. And I just hope, although I'm a little bit removed from it now, that people who are coming in at this point in time are getting the same feeling from the senior members within the industry. And I suspect they are, because the individuals I know who are currently running organizations and associations are in the position they're in because that's the way they operate, you know, in a helpful, cooperative, sometimes cutthroat, but generally understanding manner.
Well, I'll just say personally, the years I've been working at WISTC, WYSTC, we see larger organizations coming with more people, but that comes fewer people over time. And I personally think that larger organizations who have been around for quite a while do make a point of bringing a team of senior and junior staff to get a sense of the full spectrum of the industry, which I think is what you see at the conference.
A couple of years ago, I can't remember which conference it was at, attached to my badge was a little insignia that said mentor. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I was surprised to see that, I must say. And I thought, this would be interesting. Nobody will approach me. And I was amazed at how many young first-time attendees came up and asked questions, but really? Mainly just wanted to chat, to talk. Mm-hmm. I think if that is something, and I didn't feed this back at the time, but I think that is something that when the conference gets back to full flow again, that should be considered again. Not for me, but for people who are in, you know, similar situations, similar positions of experience.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear that worked. So thank you for sharing that. Anything else you'd like to share with your peers who might be listening to this?
Only that you are part of a wonderful industry that is, and this sounds very cheesy, that is doing wonderful things and providing extremely memorable experiences for young people who will take these experiences with them and hopefully pass them on to the next generations. But all I would say at the moment is really, you know, be ready, be flexible, be open-minded, be prepared to collaborate, and be good at what you do.
Okay. Well, Callum Kennedy, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today.
Wendy, it's been great. Thank you for the opportunity to dredge my memory.
Well, we wish you luck and take good care.
Thank you. I haven't gone completely. I will still be appearing at some place at some time.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you so much to Callum for sharing his time and thoughts during this Ask Us Anything conversation. If you'd like to read more about youth and student travel, or work in travel programs specifically, you'll find research publications at our website. You can also find more information about our conferences, designed specifically for professionals dealing in youth, student, and educational travel, at wisetc.org. WISE Travel Confederation is the only global not-for-profit membership organization representing the youth, student, and educational travel industry. If you work in this sector of the travel and tourism industry, consider joining our global network. Thanks for listening.